This evening's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm Darren Bresnitz. We're the host of Snacky Tunes.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Eating Disorder. Please welcome my co-host, Crazy Legs Conti.
It's a lot of clarity in your voice tonight, Chef Paul.
Is there a lot of clarity in my
voice?
There
really is.
I've taken up smoking extra.
You should do the end of the ads about all the things that can go wrong when you take a certain medication.
Yeah.
Because I would take that medication listening to you talk about anal leakage.
May cause the urge to gamble or anal leakage.
Yeah, I'm in. Give me the pill.
And the Reverend Spiro, how you holding up over there?
We're all good. We're all good.
Very nice. So what have you guys been up to lately? What kind of madcap hijinks do we need to tell the listeners out in Radio Land?
I did a quick one-day trip to Boston, where I grew up. I have a group of friends. Some of them are from high school, others from kindergarten. And every year, the couples and the two single guys, my buddy Paul and I, are not with anybody. And we gather for a dinner at Liz and Pete's house, and we travel every 10 years. We go to a destination, and it's nice. We're a very fun, open group, and we do a naughty Santa swap. So everybody has to go and buy dirty gifts for others, and you do the Santa swap.
Oh, but it's not like putting your car keys in the fishbowl.
No, not swingers. Ooh. Not swingers. No.
You're not swapping partners.
Not swapping partners, no. I mean, we've all in Key West, everybody was naked in the hot tub together, but there was no contact.
Why do I hear Jimmy Buffett in the background?
No Jimmy Buffett. But it was interesting, and I...
Because you lived in New Orleans.
I travel...
horrible. Yeah, exactly.
They're all horrible. I travel on the Chinatown Express bus, so I went in 7 a.m., visited my sister and my nephew Simon, then went to the dinner.
What'd that cost you? A cool $8?
It's up to 25 now.
Wow.
But I took the 2 a.m. bus back. Now, my secret naughty Santa swap that I received. Now, I brought down some 50 Shades of Grey bondage rope, which looked great in the display at Toys and Babeland, but by itself, it looked like I went to the hardware store and just got like a bale of twine.
Right. Yeah. What makes it special?
Maybe
special
it's like
50 Shades of Grey.
Not abrasive. I don't know. It was a branding thing, I guess. But I received what's technically called a masturbation sleeve, which is like a pocket pussy, the little rubber thing.
Nice.
And our hostess Liz gave everybody, all the guys got this giant, like the size of the Voss water bottles, of a lube, Japanese lube. Everything's in a foreign language.
The Nuru lube.
Yes. And so I'm...
Why do I know that?
I'm coming back. It's 6 a.m. I'm arriving back on the Chinatown Express. I get in. I smoke the rest of my cigar. I go home. I put some pornography on. I take out the masturbation sleeve. I realize...
We should change the name of the show to Beating Disorder.
Pretty much. And I realize that I need some lube. And I have now what appears to be a 32-ounce thing of lube. And it's gone. It fell out of my bag on the luggage rack of the Chinatown Express.
Really?
So all I can think at 6 in the morning is that the driver has found this giant 32-ounce bottle with kanji on it, Japanese kanji different from Chinese kanji, and thinks, I just got a great morning energy drink.
Yes.
So, but that was my Saturday. How about you? How about you, Rev?
I just slept.
Right. Spiro probably has a very similar... There were no gifts in Santa hats, but the same process went into effect.
That was pretty much it.
You didn't miss much, because it's impossible to keep that masturbation sleeve on your penis. It just keep popping off and shooting across the room.
Like letting the air
out of the... Oh my God, it's rolling
like
in the dust bunnies.
A Malaysian freaking over there,
it's like fucking Stretch Armstrong. So today we have a very special guest with us, an old friend of mine. He used to own a place called Cafe Central back in the day. I think it opened up in 1976 and went to about 1986. There wasn't a hell of a lot of information on it, strangely enough, which Peter will tell us about. But there was a great article in People magazine that I found, an article from 1984. It just starts out, used to be Hayden Planetarium boasted the most dazzling display of stars in Manhattan, but now there's competition across the street at Cafe Central. It was a pretty amazing place, and he's got some very, very interesting stories, so please help me warmly welcome our friend Peter Herrero.
Yes, welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Herrero.
Give me a minute, I'm having a wank.
Did that story with Crazy Legs got you going?
Yes.
It's been a while. You used to spend your nights with Cher and Deborah Winger, and now Crazy Legs is getting you going.
Well, you know, I can only have a wank once a week, and you four guys are...
If I'd known, I would have brought the masturbation sleeve. It's only been used twice, Peter.
You know, do you ever get one of them vibrators that have that little cup on it?
That's expensive.
Of course. Well, it's $14. You can get them. I know that because I just bought a new one. Anyway. So, what would you like to know?
Well, there's so much. Every time we chat, you have so many fantastic stories, and I just think it's just such an amazing time. Even just now, coming here on the train with you, we were talking about, you know, the difference of New York then and now. It's pretty amazing. When you opened that place, you said that your rent was $900 a month.
It was $900 or $1,000. I can't remember exactly, but it was, you know, and we said this when we were talking before, that, you know, now restaurants are in the rent-paying business. You know, then they were in the hospitality business. It was a different kind of whole different sensibility. And New York was a different place, you know. You know, now it's a place where there's a lot of selfies, you know, a lot of sycophantious, parasitic PR guys, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. But then, you know, if you would have told me then that one day I would pay you know, $5,000 a month for a fucking PR guy, you know, I'd say, well, eat my ass or something.
Mm-hmm. So how did you wind up getting those crowds into?
You know, it was a different, you know, I attended bar and did that kind of, went that route for a long time in Dr. Generosity's, which is a music club, and I worked up at Eric's across from Elaine's, and you know, people I worked with were actors, you know, going to the Neighborhood Playhouse or these kind of things. So it was very organic, you know, the way things happened then. You met a guy who was an actor, his name was... doing one acts, and his name was Robert De Niro, and, you know, he was doing one act play, or his name was John Hurt, or his name, just name him. I mean, they did theater, they did little stuff like that, you know.
Well, that kind of goes back to what you were saying about people used to be able to come here and they could take a chance, because they were only paying, you know, you said you had an apartment on East End Avenue, how much are you paying?
Well, that, before that, I was on I was on the West Side, and I paid like $96 a month. And then when I started to make a couple of bucks, I lived on number 10 East End Avenue. And
wait, I was paying... repeat that for our listeners.
What, $96?
How much? $96 a month.
$96
a month.
Yeah. It was only a studio.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Because for $96 a month, I can't get cable.
The reality was there was no cable then. I mean,
I'm just saying. You know,
well, I was talking to my father over Thanksgiving, and I asked him what his salary was back then, and he said, I think it was about $52 a week. And he said, but, you know, the rent was $65 a week for a three-bedroom in Bay Ridge.
Wow.
Yeah, you know? It's you know, I'm 68 years old, and I know I look great, right?
You do. You do. I wouldn't have 68.
Not a gray hair in my fucking head. Anyway, no. No, look, the reality was, you're right. New York was a place where people came to. You could come here and be lucky. You could be lucky because you were paying $96.
Okay.
You could take a chance.
And the subway was 15 cents, you know, and they would think. And the city was designed for that. It wasn't like something that just occurred. I mean, they had rent control and rent stabilization. It started, I think, in the Depression. I mean, it started a long, long time ago, because they realized that this was a city that needed that. Otherwise, who's going to put soles on your shoes?
You needed a lot of feet.
You know, yeah, there was a lot of feet here. So, and there was a lot of infrastructure, a lot of stuff had to be fixed. So that was, you know, we were lucky in that regard.
So back then on the Upper West Side, what else was up there?
There was Sarah, what's her name? You know, Palatial something. You know, the what's that? The food joint.
Oh, that.
No, now she, now it's in supermarkets. Okay. I can't remember.
Oh, the Sarah Beth dessert wine?
Yeah, one of that.
The Sarah Lee. Sarah Lee?
Sarah Lee?
No, Sarah Lee started in like Iowa.
Okay, all right. You
know, no, you know, there was nothing. On 75th Street and Columbus Avenue, it stopped. Then they opened Museum Cafe, and that later on became the Arc Guys, you know, Arc restaurants and that kind of stuff. It was dangerous. You know, the year I opened up, there was 1,800 murders. You might check that, and maybe it's only 1,900. I don't know. Uh-huh. But there was a lot of... It was a dangerous city. You know, there were... Listen, there were two or three million tourists. You took out a map on any street and you got mugged. You know, they went, oh, you know. And now there's 55 million, which supports, you know, a lot of things. You know, I mean, there's 55 million people who are paying hotel tax, taxi cab tax, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it was a different time. You know, I was able to open that place because I didn't have a whole hell of a lot of money. I knew from other places that I worked, I knew a lot of writers, you know, Lanford Wilson and Mammoth, and you know, all the guys that came into the place.
Mammoth used to come to your place?
Yeah, all the times.
Well, the one thing I understand from reading about it is, unlike other scenes, unlike maybe Max's Kansas City, which might have been mostly music or musicians, you had really what was the amalgam of professional ballerinas to the art crowd, to Warhol, to these actors, some of them at the time very famous, some not so famous, that it seems like yours was the one place where everybody came. Whereas maybe Elaine's could have been the literary crowd. You had everything. Yeah,
The one thing I guarded against, and I really, because I saw people that behaved like, in those days we called them groupies and stuff like that, and I realized that I was busy from the beginning with neighborhood people, you know, and neighborhood actors, you know, and neighborhood people from the city ballet or ballet theater or stuff like that. And it seemed to me altogether the right move, you know, I didn't want any publicity. I didn't want it to change. I wanted it to stay the way it was because it worked for them and it worked for me. And it just became, you know, part of the everyday deal.
Well, I mean, that's an old school kind of.
It was. I mean, that's...
It's an old school, and it's also a current school convention in regards to, if you've got something that works, you know, everybody wants to come into it and say, like, oh, we can do it better for you, we can do this for you, we can be your PR agent, we can do whatever. But listen, if you've got what's going on and it's not broken, you don't fix it.
No, you don't fix it.
Well, this is also a time we're talking pre-internet, pre-cell phone.
Yeah. Yes.
So that if there was one place where, say, Bridget Nielsen, who wanted to marry Sylvester Stallone, but did not know him, would go, she would come to Peter's Cafe Central and introduce herself and say, where I'm supposed to meet Sylvester Stallone, say, here, go, I don't know.
I tell her, go stand at the bar and see what happens.
take us through a typical night there. I know you had Bruce Willis was your bartender, right?
Yeah.
And John Goodman was your doorman?
Yeah, but they weren't Bruce and John. They were just the two guys who
were. They were just two guys.
I have a. But keep going.
Douche one, douche two.
I have a Bruce Willis question, but I'm going to let you tell us about a typical night first.
They were waitresses and waiters and they hit it. You know, they had talent, and they really did. They were talented guys. You know, they did a lot of theater. They did beer commercials. They did everything they could do. But they were talented guys. There were talented waiters and waitresses that worked there that didn't make it. I mean, it's you know, there's a Marlon Brando out there someplace, but he might be milking cows. I don't know, you know. But he can't come to New York now unless mommy and daddy can afford to send him here.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's essentially the difference to all of this.
So I always love when you tell stories about the... like on any given night, you'd have Warhol at one table, you'd have Cher at another table, and Deborah Winger would be sitting there, and Al Pacino.
Yeah.
And,
it was we kept it, and the celebrities, they kind of dealt with everybody. The rule was that we weren't going to elevate one above the other. You know, that was it. In other words, no one had a special table. Mm-hmm. You know, you sat. We had a table in the back by the bathroom was where I sat. And if they couldn't get a table, they sat near the bathroom with me.
But we understood that was a great table to sit at because the emaciated, waifish models and dancers would be wandering to the bathroom for other reasons, and you would see them tottering by.
That's
so.
Right. However, let me put a historical reality to the
okay, please.
Who's walking by. At the City Ballet, that was Balanchine and Robbins. So they had very tall, statuesques, not emaciated.
They were,
they had breasts, and they were really fine. And then there was, you know, Christie Brinkley, who was
an uptown girl,
dead beautiful. Wow. And then a friend of mine who was, I thought, one of the great ladies of all time was Carol Alt. I went to a wedding. Right, right. She was stunningly beautiful, and she wasn't like a, you know... Twiggy, after she was a model, Twiggy and I, we were pals, and she came to do a show in New York, and we became friends because her agent knew somebody that knew me. I don't remember, so I forget the name of the show. Oh, I forget.
That one.
Oh, you guys are 15 years old.
No, no, no. We'll come up with it. All right,
at,
so...
Oh, I'm looking at you like you'd know. Oh! anyway, so there was like a synergy. There was a thing going on that those people kept the place very closely held, right. You know? And that's how it works.
No, like I mean, we've heard stories like this about Odeon and about, you know...
But Odeon,
It seems like, though, your place, people...
Yeah.
Because they realized they were home or they were in a comfortable environment, they could do whatever they felt like, whether it was drinking too much or fooling around. Yeah. Yes. So it was a little more...
And it goes back to the Mud Club and
yeah, you know, the Mud Club is cool. I love the Mud Club. Yeah,
places like this where actually it became a home. It became someplace where people felt at home.
Exactly. Look, I used to go to Odeon all the time. I loved the Odeon, but the Odeon was a little bit more structured in certain ways. My place had structure, but it looked chaotic in certain ways, and everybody knew it. You know, I mean, everybody knew that I was going to seat somebody from Kansas who just walked by. I'd say, hey, Al, Bob, I'm sorry, this is from Kansas. They're going to say, yeah, just act like you won't talk. You know, and
Bob being the hero.
And they would talk. No, Bob, Robert was a wonderful. Robert wasn't like a knock-around guy from downtown. He was a well-thought-of. His father was.
It's funny. His father was an artist.
It's funny. Whenever I see De Niro doing interviews and things, It triggers like, oh shit, he's an artist. He's so good at what he does. Yeah, he's a gangster. You realize
people think because De Niro and Pacino don't do a lot of interviews or don't say a lot, that they don't have something to say, but absolutely the opposite is true.
And Al too was, we weren't pals. We saw each other. I spent more time with Robert, I think, but they just were, they were good guys. They just were good guys who started to become really in demand,
and
it was nice to watch, tell you the truth. It wasn't.
When did Cafe Central open? Or when, in others, this time period would have been coming off of, Pacino would have been having finished Sea of Love. He would have done Scarecrow and The Godfathers.
Yeah, yeah. It was long before that, though, right? Wasn't it Panic in Needle Park?
He did Panic in Needle Park. That's what kind of got him off. Yeah. And then, of course, he always came back into the theater.
Right.
I love the idea that the thing that you just don't see anymore, that whole enclave of all the different kinds of New York characters. Because, you had Hell's Angels who worked for you, right? Or one of you guys was a Hell's Angel.
Chuck Zito was a good friend of mine, and he was a Hell's Angel. And when he started to come in, that must have been in the late 70s, I had to go over to him and say, we can't have everybody from Third Street over here, man. I said,
they were coming up there
down Crazy Legs Block.
I live on that block. Usually there'd be like a SWAT team that would raid the headquarters. Time though, it was all the JV cops. Like, and I was going, what's going on? It was Chuck Zito's book signing. They were escorting him.
Chuck and I became good friends. He was a lovely guy. He also, was the top 10 toughest guys I've ever met, and that puts him in a really elevated category. I met a lot of tough guys, but I figured, I'm either going to get, I'm going to have to go talk to somebody, because I was on what they call a scholarship with my place. Explain that if you ask me, but I prefer not to.
you mean like keeping the mob out?
Yeah, I had some
waste management.
It was a different, it was a different mob. This was before, what's his name?
Giuliani?
No, this is before the Italian gangster who killed
Teflon Don?
I didn't like
Sparks,
this guy.
I mean, what are we talking about?
Gotti.
No, he's a good
Gotti.
Friend.
Talking about Gotti.
Gotti, yeah, John Gotti. You know, that was a different kind of guy, you know. It was.
And he used to go there, too, right? I remember Gerard telling me.
Yeah, but he wasn't who he was then. And besides, I was on, okay, let me get it out of the way. I was on a scholarship. That meant that my father, rest in peace, was a bookmaker's numbers guy. Right. And his best, closest friend was a guy named Tony Bananas.
So, oh, wait. Tony Bananas from the Colombo?
Yeah, that Tony Bananas. Anyway, so they had gotten arrested in, I don't know, in 1939. I don't remember. And they met, you know, they arrested through everybody in a gymnasium, and that's how they got to know each other. So, so I was on a scholarship because my father had done the right thing, and, you know, he just did the right thing.
And you were also a bookmaker, too, right?
I did a little bit of numbers in the bookmaking. I did not too much, just a little bit.
Well,
I went to where
else? Statute of limitations.
Yeah. So speaking of that, your former door guy, John Goodman, is now reprising a role from an original James Caan movie, The Gambler.
Yes.
So did he? Would he have picked up anything from hanging out with you?
He could have.
All right.
He could have. Yeah, I mean, that could have, you know. Listen, there was it was a very colorful place, and it wasn't only famous actors. You know, it was non-famous actors. It was wise guys. It was not a wise guy hangout. It wasn't like later on there was a couple of places that were, you know, John went to, and that it wasn't that. It was kind of off limits, you know, which was good. And I tell you the truth, I never paid anybody a nickel. That was part of that skull. Nice. I didn't have to come up with anything. I was on that, you know, that kind of thing. So the place, in terms of all of that, had a nice mixture. And there was a lot of humility attached to the place. There were a lot of very young actors or young dancers.
Yeah, it's not something you hear in the restaurant industry much these days, is humility.
No, there's none of it. No, no. We talked about it before. You know, this guy can cook. He's not another guy with a spatula. I mean, he knows what he's doing.
So though he does handle a spatula well.
I do.
No, they got I can sling a spatula
they
like
got
nobody's business.
I watch the guys in the kitchen. I could do that. You know, I can't do it anymore because my hands don't work. But I got the. You know, they got tricks. But I mean, he's really.
Well, when you were there, it was a time, and you were even saying it that you weren't gonna. You weren't going to hire a chef. You didn't want the food to be
No, I wasn't.
The star.
No, I had worked at the George Ray in Perigo Park, so I knew chefs, and I think the chefs then were a little bit different. That there wasn't as many. You know, there's a lot now. And they told me, they said, don't even try to do this, you know. And I didn't want to wear a suit and a tie every day to work, you know. So, and then they helped me, and then they put me into a guy named Uncle Tommy, who, anyways, it was a Chinese kitchen, and they did wonderful things, and they came up with, we did small plates before small plates were done. This is a long time ago already, you know. And it worked. It all, but it wasn't just haphazard, you know. That's what we wanted, and that's what I got.
It was the hospitality industry.
It was I wanted people to, you know, I wanted neighborhood people to come there. You know, I didn't want to have to charge. You know, listen, when I bought wine, I didn't want to find wines that I can charge $10. I wanted to find good wines that were the right price and that we could pass it on to those people sitting out there. So the wine guys, now I'm doing business from day one. The wine guys want to be in the place.
Right.
So when they gave me that nonsense, I would say to them, come on, guys, you know, this is not what I'm, go find me something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go find me the next big thing, because they can do that.
Yeah.
You know, they can do that. And that's what they did. I don't know if that happens today. I think today it's you paying rent. It's
yeah, it's all about paying rent. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break for station identification. And, and then when we come back, let's talk about some of the more exciting stories.
Yes.
I got a question about the guy pouring the wine at your place when we come back.
Okay. I definitely want to go into all the time from Vietnam and bookmaking and into the later years of running your theater in North Carolina.
Oh, jeez. Okay, yeah. All right.
We'll be back, folks.
You are listening to Hard Bodies, Feel Some Bodies.
I know that I have weaknesses at all. My name is Brandon Boy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
It is so exciting to have this new medium.
Hosting After the Jump has been a huge part of me transitioning from being a blogger to somebody who has sort of real important conversations with people in real life.
My show, I kind of describe it as an audio trade magazine.
I learn a ton from the guests every week, whether it's restaurants, bars.
All the hosts at Heritage all come from different perspectives.
Everyone should be listening to this. If you're interested in conservation and practical approach to renewable food sources, you know, not this big industry.
Whether it's history, laws, social policies of food, I think people now take food seriously, and hopefully what's on their plate will become something very special.
And I feel that podcasting has a future, giving people information in a format they can really use on the go.
We need your support to keep these conversations going. To donate, visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hi, I'm Reggie Watts, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back. That guy has a good voice.
Yeah, Reggie Watts. Awesome. Love Reggie Watts.
Interesting.
He's got a good voice.
Oh. All right, so I'm dying to ask my question. So amidst all these famous actors and celebrities, the guy tending bar wore a baseball hat, served drinks, very calm, cool, collected.
Yeah.
Maybe went by the nickname Bruno, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Bruno.
Later, when he put his album out, I think it was called The Life of Bruno, but it was Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And I read an interview with Linda Fiorentino.
Linda, lovely girl.
Yes. So when she lived in New York, and she was an upcoming actress, also Bruce Willis was an actor trying to make it.
Her sister.
Yeah. So now this is the question. Oh. Linda Fiorentino said, the reporter asked, like, did you ever sleep with Bruce Willis? She said, well, we had one mattress, and my sister, myself, and Bruce would sleep on the mattress, but I never had sex with him. I never slept with him. And I always wondered, did the sister sleep in the middle, and did she prevent it? But you're saying the sister was lovely as well.
Both sisters were lovely. They were beautiful. They were lithe. They had very nice bodies.
It's not true.
There it is. There's the answer.
I think
it couldn't have happened.
I think of course they had sex.
Oh, there it is. Thank you. Yeah. That's why I have you on
don't
the show.
You think?
It was
yeah,
the 70s.
Absolutely. I knew it.
I mean, look, listen, there was, you know, it was 70s and 80s were great. I mean, there was off the wall fucking going on, man. I mean, it was
So to what I was saying in the break, the 70s were not a good time in New York. The 70s were one
they weren't,
of
they weren't a good time for the socioeconomic stance, but from like a partying stance, they were pretty fantastic.
Yeah, but at the same time, economic is the word I want to focus on here, because like everybody's talking about how hard it is to start a business in New York right now. How hard was it to start a business in the 70s when the economy had tanked?
Tanked, yeah.
Gerald Ford told us go fuck ourselves, basically. Right, so I mean, what was it like starting a business then?
Well, you had to pay people. I mean, it was a payoff thing that happened. Listen, there was the State Liquor Authority. There was always a little piece of change for them. There
really?
Was the building department, this and that. I mean, it was not exorbitant, but you know, you could smooth the way, and you kind of knew who was a taker and who wasn't. You know, I mean, it was, you wanted to get things approved, especially when you built it. It was, listen, the city was in an awful, awful fix, man. It was, every wall had graffiti, every train, the streets. I mean, it was a bad, bad time. You know, there was, the cops, took money. I mean, everybody knows that. I mean, I don't think they do that today, but knows.
Well, I mean, if a cop walks into a place today, you can't go to a cop and go like, "Hey, this is for free." That they'll walk away in a minute.
But then the money, you put it under a coffee cup, and they had a bad guy come in. You know, I mean, that's the way it was.
And this
is
the city that you came back to after serving in Vietnam.
I grew up here, and
what part did you grow up in?
In Coney Island, the Brighton Beach. That area. My family lived there. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was probably, where was I going to go? I mean, I got out. I was, I was very happy to be out,
How many tours did you do?
I did one tour. I did a 13, I think maybe it was 14 months. I don't remember.
As a Marine?
I was in the Marine Corps. And, look, that's some fucking right here. You know, wars aren't what you think it is. It's just a whole other deal. And you're young enough that if you survive it, you think about it in a different way. You know, you think about stuff in a different way. Life in general. All I wanted to do when I came home, I thought, you know, if I could make a payroll, then I'll be fine. Uh-huh. You know, that's really how I thought. And I got out and I had a little difficulty with a couple of things. I had a lot of difficulty before I went in. That's why I went in. But I pretty much, you know, straightened out and I had a little time getting high and doing that. And then I just wanted to make a payroll. You know, I figured.
Interesting.
I didn't have any dream. I didn't want to be an actor. I didn't want to be a high wire guy. I didn't want to be a bookmaker.
I love that the fact that you said like I wanted to make a payroll is like something that like my dad would have said as well. Yeah. And the whole thing is today you have kids who are entrepreneurs and they're working into they're doing companies, whether that be in the food industry or not. Yeah.
CEOs taking meetings.
But you know what they want to do? They want to sell their company. They don't give a shit if their company's making a profit. They don't give a shit if their company's, actually worth anything to anybody. All they care about is, like, let me go public. Let me sell my company. Let me move on. I've created something. And it could be something that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I don't give a shit. Let me just sell it and move on.
It's funny. When we were coming here on the train before and Peter was talking about, New York Now and how you can't come here. But like you said, you know, Warhol never would have been able to move here from Pennsylvania now. And he said, you know, and it's not dangerous anymore. And you know for a fact that there are certain people in this city that deserve to be killed.
Absolutely.
That's how they weeded out the talent back in the day.
I had a mother the other day. I was in Fairway, and I'm looking at the yogurts. Uh-huh. And she's got two kids in a stroller. And she says to me, you got to hit it. She says to me, excuse me, mother with children, can I get in there? I said, I'm talking yogurt. you wait. You know, really, you did the Fairway. Here, you got to sign up.
Yeah,
Fairway.
Yeah, it's a sponsor. Fairway. Really?
Mother but, with if she was, yeah, toddlers. But it, she said toddlers, not children.
No. Yeah, and honestly, if she was at, like, you know, the place that, you know, the welfare joint that's giving food away, yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
But you're in fucking Fairway.
Do you think if Cafe Central was open today that you would unfortunately be serving the CEOs, the youthful CEOs and the mothers with strollers?
I would.
In the
torture,
Upper West Side?
If I was busy like I would torture them. I would. Listen. People, if you can find them, because they're all, it's a long time ago. I would, if you were like a signifying who the fuck I think I am, and I found you, mm-hmm. Boy, would I have fun with you. You know, I mean, I could just, because, you know, the reality was, yeah, hit me and the whole place is going to fall on you. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. You're going to be like, it's going to be like the pyramids just went bloop and you got stuck under them. It was such a, I don't know how to describe
it. Plus, you were a Marine. I mean, it's not like people were just trying to step on you.
But the last thing I wanted to do was have a fight with somebody. I really didn't. I mean, I really didn't. That had nothing to do. Listen, I grew up in neighborhoods where we had to fight a lot, but that fighting isn't like that stuff over there. Uh-huh. That's a whole different thing. You know,
fighting over yogurt at Fairway.
Over there, a fight over yogurt at Fairway. You know, you put a hand grenade up his ass and go away. But you can't do that. It's not a good analogy, right. Pardon me.
Well, I've seen Black Swan. Ballerinas are tougher than they look.
Yes, but they're very soft when you...
were there anybody that would come in there, male or female, that you just felt like was a kindred spirit, that was sort of like somebody who brought a smile to your face every time?
Good question. Yes, there were several. Like I said, Carol Alt was just... Mm-hmm. She was, I forget about looking at her. She was a beautiful, beautiful woman. But I'm sure she still is a beautiful woman. But there was something that, you know, made you smile. She had a sense about her that was nice. Raul Julia was another one. He had a sense about him that was just terrific. Jason Miller, he wrote Championship Season, and mm-hmm. he was the priest in The Exorcist and got mm-hmm. nominated.
Oh, yeah.
He was a wacky guy, but I had known him a long time, and he was like that, you know.
Played a Greek in The Exorcist.
Lanford Wilson. Lanford Wilson was like that. He was a spectacular writer. Yeah, I mean, there were people in terms of, I tell you, one girl that was just, I remember, she was very young then, Diane Lane.
Oh, okay.
Sure, she was very young, but I remember, I didn't know and know her. Hello, Diane, how are you? Mm-hmm. You know, don't keep in touch, not like, but I remember once she walked in the door and she was wearing, I think I'm correct in remembering this, she was wearing like a green knit dress, you know, that hugged her body. She couldn't be more than 21 then, and it wasn't shorter, you know, it was just a, and but I remember looking at her, and for some reason she was coming in the back, she waved to me, maybe she wanted to ask me a question or something like that, and she was walking, and it didn't look like she was walking in slow motion, it wasn't like a movie. But I thought, how does this happen?
How do you get
to look like that? You know, and there was a lot of that. There was women that were so, and men too that were. Yeah. All right, don't look at me like. I mean,
no.
there was men that would. You know, you say, how the fuck do you get so good looking? How does this happen? You know, of course, I was very attractive in those days myself. But, and I'm sure Diane, whenever I walked by, would go. But yeah, I mean.
Well, she was beautiful, but she was a great. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Staines. When she was 15, she was a spectacular actress.
Yeah, she was. Well. Yeah, she, you know,
you gave Raul Julia advice too on something, right? Or people would ask you, people would confide in you.
Oh yeah, yeah. People
you were known
would,
to.
Well, Raul and I were friends and stuff like that. His wife, spectacular lady too. You know, getting advice. Yeah, I told him to shut up every once in a while. He sang all the time. You know, I said, what are you singing
for?
Oh,
so I thought it was the opposite. I thought you were encouraging him. You were telling him not to
sing. I encouraged him sometimes. Sometimes I said, I'm talking. Can you, you know, because he would burst in the song and he had that incredible voice. And, you know, he's very tall, very good looking. He was a good guy. And but I knew him on a personal level. I mean, he was a friend. And
So after Cafe Central closed, you moved to North Carolina?
No. After Cafe Central closed, I had a restaurant in Spain, and we went to Spain.
A little more interesting.
The ballet dancer. Jerry and I went to Spain.
Your girlfriend was a ballet dancer?
Yeah, she was in the City Ballet. And she
So you speak from experience of their softness.
Yes, and she's, you know, she's a ballet mistress. She's in with the Balanchine Trust, you know, and she lives in Richmond now, the mother and a boyfriend, and you know she's a grown woman, very sweet, very nice, beautiful, very tall.
So how did you wind up running a theater in North Carolina?
Well,
going from a hotshot New York restaurateur to Spain.
I had a friend who was a producer, and I'm not going to mention his name because I get so pissed off.
That's right. We don't have any listeners.
Because if I tell you, know.
You can mention his name.
He's a nice guy.
So Robert De Niro said what? Okay, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Robert said, anyways, he called me up. I was in New York. He called me up. He said, you know, I'm doing this show, Menopause the Musical, at the Capri Theater in Charlotte.
It's already said, funny.
Yeah, so
Menopause
I said,
the Musical.
So what do you want of me? He said, well, maybe you could help. We're going to rebuild that theater. I said, well, you got it because it's, you know, it was a movie theater. He said, and also I want to talk to you. Come on down here to Charlotte. I want to talk to you about something. What he wanted was all the concessions and the bar and all of this stuff. There was money to be made.
Right.
And he wanted to know, he said, why don't you come to work for me and then maybe you could do something with the cash.
Something with the cash.
So yeah, the IRS,
like,
I don't care.
Make it appear.
Yeah. Menopause the Musical has just outgrossed Cats on Broadway out of North Carolina.
In a 700 seat house.
The producers.
So I said, well, the parking lot can only take cash, right? $7. That's $7. I said, then let's go make a deal for eight ATM machines. Because then you have deniability. I know the IRS is listening.
That's something
that. And so I wound up GMing the, but I have no idea what there was cash, right? But there was, so I GMed the musical and the theater and all of that.
So how was Menopause, the musical? Was it?
It was wonderful. It's been out, God knows, I mean, 30 companies or something all over the world. But it's very, very funny. And the women who would come, you know, the theater held 700 people. And I think 70% of that were women and 70% of them were menopausal. So
the heat in that place must have been.
That's why he reached the dome. It opened.
I started out hiring one cop, then I hired two, and then one for the parking lot because someone would come in with their, I don't want to pay for that. I can't believe I bought a ticket and I have to pay. I'd say, here's $20. Don't leave me alone. Go away. They would call me from the box office to come out. You know, I came out before curtain. Anyway, some of it was very sad and some of it was. You know, the behavior of the customers of the house was, but some, I mean, a woman started to cry and then urinated on the floor.
Oh, no.
And then one was beating up a husband, and, I had to get the car.
And this is before the play started.
Yeah, this is before the play started. It was very, and I became very understanding of women who have menopausal realities.
How understanding are you of the restaurant business today? Would you go into it again?
You know, people have talked to me about it. Two things. I won't raise money because I don't want to be a principal owner of anything, you know. Mm. I still like it. I still know how it works. I would do it if it wasn't all about da-da, if there was no PR people involved, if there was nobody who said, you know, I want to meet Frank Sinatra, Rudy Valli, shut up, you know? Mm-hmm. Why don't we just meet people in the neighborhood, you know?
But that's not even, thing, the concentration of stars isn't even possible, really, as much as it was.
Now it's all arranged. No. It's a reality show.
Exactly. It is.
That's not true. I mean, come on, in L.A. it still is. It's not like that we used to, L.A. is a lot more like that than
New
York.
Well, they get stars and they have to eat.
Yeah, but L.A. is L.A., you know, I think.
Some people talk to me about doing something in Los Angeles. I just, you know. Don't want to move to Los Angeles.
Well, all right.
That's the only problem about Los Angeles. I love Los Angeles, but you have to live in Los Angeles to be there.
I don't necessarily need another restaurant from you, but I think we need a book from you.
Several people have talked to me about books, but they, you know, something. If someone wanted to write about the time, you know, and about that, the cafe was kind of the yellow brick road for the arts, you know, going here and there. But they.
I don't know.
A lot of guys want to.
Paul's a good writer. You should talk to him,
or at least an oral history, because it seems to me
they wanted to know about who fucked who.
Who doesn't?
Because today, you know, the news doesn't. It's everything is opinion. Everything is a selfie. Right. You know, it's more interesting. You want to know who fucked who? Fine, but don't you want to know why?
Just
because I got a vagina, I got a penis, so let's, you know, I mean, it's...
But isn't that usually how it works? I mean...
You'd be surprised.
But there's how did they come together? Yeah. You know, they don't want to know.
With the shoes at Cafe Central?
The who?
The shoes? There were shoes? Or people would be... Oh, I guess not so much shoes, but you had crayons?
We had crayons on the table.
So that's how people got other people's phone numbers or their contact information.
Yeah, that's also how artists would draw on the... things.
All
right. Today this is how they let kids into the restaurant.
No kids. No high chairs, no children.
Yes!
That was it. We used to have a nice lunch business, but it was like Cicely Tyson and Miles. Miles lived down the block. I really loved Miles Davis.
Wow.
And he used to come and say, what are you doing, man? I said, I'll tell you a funny story with Miles Davis. We got time?
We do.
Yeah, we got time.
Okay. A friend of mine named Peter Weller, he was RoboCop. Peter Weller, lovely guy.
He was also
Sons of Anarchy currently.
What's his name? Naked Lunch. He was
he was a wonderful theater actor, then did movies and all of that, and we were very good friends. In fact, he was the best man at one of my weddings. Anyways, he went to North Texas State, I think it was, and he played the trumpet pretty good, and he was enamored of Miles Davis. And Miles was there. It was lunchtime, and he was sitting there, and he's Miles Davis, who you know, is a different kind of guy. And I only knew him and got along with him, but, you know, if Miles didn't want you to come, you just don't. You know, you leave him alone. So Peter's there, and he says to me, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he says, oh, man, introduce me to Miles. I said, oh, Jesus, Peter. I said, no. He says, no, I want to tell him how much. I said, please don't do this, man. I said, you know, listen, he's having a hamburger. Leave him alone. He says, no, I got it. I said, okay. So I see Miles. He's facing me, and I go like this, and he goes like this, and Peter walks up to him and says, you know, I love you, Mr. Davis. I love your music, you're this, you're that. I saw you at... you know, with Alice Tully Hawk, whatever it is, he goes on and wouldn't stop. And then Miles looks up at him and says, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, fuck it. And that was that.
That could be the name of the book. That was that.
Well, you know, one other thing before we wrap this up. Yeah. One thing that always stuck in my head that you said to me once about this, you said, it's really not that complicated what we do. No. You know, it's the hospitality business. Yeah. It has the word hospital in it.
Yeah.
When people come in, they want to leave feeling better.
Yeah.
And that's right. That's something that everybody who knows awesome. You says that you were famous for. It's just bringing people together, seating a room a certain way, yeah. and just really feeling it. And a lot of people recall it as like being in a living room.
I learned that from other people, you know, the Jillies and these kind of guys. I mean, I learned that from old-timers. And also, you know, I figured I really want to come into my place every night and be pissed off. I said, you know, I had a bad time for 4 years when I was in the Marine Corps. I wanted to have an easy time. And when people would say to me, oh, the restaurant, but the hours, I said, don't be ridiculous. Oh, the hours. Oh, they're just terrible. With all those women and people happy and, you know, they're awful. Oh, gee, I think I'll kill myself.
Yeah, there's a lot worse things you can do.
Yeah, there's a lot worse things.
Than feed people and drink wine and sit around and
you gotta remember why
enjoy your life.
Yeah, you got to remember why you got in this business. And if you don't remember, if the reasons you got into this business with the be ridiculously wealthy and all of that, then you know, go work downtown.
Be a hedge funder.
Yeah, we'll be a hedge fund guy.
Well, Peter, thank you very much for coming down here today and joining us, and we look forward to hearing some more of your stories.
Well, if I'm living and breathing, can I take these off?
Now? Yeah.
My ears.
We're leaving a lot better than we came in.
I got deaf. I'm deaf in one ear, and this is killing me here.
All right, let's get you some pizza and salad.
Yeah, there we go.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.